tune in to Turn on the News daily from 313.9.org. You can go to newsroom.313.9.org for links to anything you might hear here, including links to international radio art, radio news, media news, links, and more. Go to 313.9 and newsroom.313.9.org for everything you want to know about transmission arts. And to hear Turn on the News daily. You're tuned into Turn on the News, 313.9's weekly look at radio art, radio news, media news, sound art, and more. This week, our two-hour show will look at the FCC's hearing this week on low-power FM. Sarah Kendall and Noah Reibel will talk to Kristen Thompson from the Future of Music Coalition about musicians and the radio. We'll hear the Pale Blues from Neil Young and other commentary from They Might Be Giants and Wilson Pickett and Glenn Miller on the subject. We'll also listen to Radio Canada International and their crisis in the international shortwave broadcasting field and the BBC's questioning of youth listening to radio anymore. We'll preview the Dayton Hamvention this weekend, May 18th through 20th in Dayton, Ohio, for amateur radio lovers. And we'll preview Captain Morgan on Pirate Shortwave. We'll tune in Matt Valentine and Erica Elder with a radio broadcast from Hudson, New York. We'll preview Scanner's live transmission in England and more on Turn on the News. Today's radio news starts at Stonehenge.
And we'll go outside the Sarsen Stone Ring. Behind the Sarsen Stone, everything sounds fairly similar out here. And I'm just going to walk in a line back to the altar stone.
This is a link via MSNBC to a YouTube video where British researchers conducted experiments at Stonehenge to determine how sounds echoed within the ancient circle of sounds and what it would sound like.
Turn right and walk towards the speaker. You can hear it's a drum beat now. This is what it sounds like.
You can go to cosmiclog.msnbc.msn.com for more information about that and also to the YouTube video link. We'll listen to that a little bit in the background while we update you on other radio news. In the United States, the Federal Communications Commission is the body that regulates the airwaves, and they just named two new commissioners, Jessica Rosenworcel, and the new Democratic commissioner, and takes over from Michael Kopp's seat, and Ajit Pai takes the Republican seat formerly held by Meredith Atwell Baker, according to Broadcasting and Cable. They were both sworn in Monday, May 14th.
Left Sarsen Stone at the edge of the circle and the blue stone in front of it.
Wireless companies are calling for the White House to speed up spectrum efficiency and the freeing up of new spectrum for new wireless applications. CTI, the Wireless Association, has said that while 125 megahertz of spectrum for broadcasters has been freed up in recent years, they need more. The National Telecommunications and Information Administration has identified a potential 210 megahertz of government spectrum, but but does not yet have a plan for freeing that up. And they also have to convince many broadcasters to give up their frequencies. There's talk now about giving up the AM radio band and shifting those stations to FM bands, which would be increased. But it's just talk among the industry. You can go to John Egerton's report in Broadcasting and Cable at broadcastingandcable.com.
I'm sorry, forgive me, my pastor and all them down at Christian Fellowship. The radio.
Contrary to much of the self-serving rhetoric, deregulation and the resulting consolidation of the radio industry has revitalized and perhaps saved an industry that I and many fellow Americans alike view as a national treasure.
Behind us now is a trailer for Corporate FM, a movie that aims to track the radio industry from the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And it debuted in April at the Kansas City Film Festival and faces a June 2nd Kickstarter funding deadline.
We can't cover the debt. Who wins in a consolidation?
You can see the trailer at newsroom.3103.9.org.
The fans are hungry for new music.
The beauty of radio is it's free and it's everywhere.
My dream is to bring it back. Local again. Human.
Matthew Leser at Radio Survivor reports that young people are not listening to the British Broadcasting Company in the way they used to. Quote, the amount of time spent listening is falling across all youth groups. Mark Friend at the BBC noted, dropping 0.9% for ages 15 through 19, 0.1% for 20 to 24, 0.6% for ages 25 to 29. And we have a short clip of BBC Interactive music expert Mark Friend and Andrew Scott, the head of music at the BBC Future Media, discussing radio's history with the BBC.
Radio is going to be 90 years old in the UK later this year. And of course, it started off and grew nicely until the 1950s when TV became popular in households. So through the 1950s, TV became the medium of choice. And we saw the amount of time that people spent listening to radio roughly halve through the 1950s and until about halfway through the 1960s. And since the 1960s, we then saw 40 years of listening growth as radio grew its content offer, launched local radio, we had pirate radio, we launched about 300 commercial radio stations in the UK, and adapted to technology, so launched FM. Launched the transistor radio. So radio, listening per head grew and grew again until 2006. So we saw 40 years of growth until it was higher than it had been in the 1950s. And since 2006, we've seen a sort of slight decline.
John Anderson at DIY Media reports about another slight decline, breaking down the report from the Society of Broadcast Engineers. That shows that there are fewer broadcast engineers these days, thanks to radio consolidation and the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Quote, nearly three-quarters, 73.9% of working Society of Broadcast Engineers members are 46 years old or older. The average age of a Society of Broadcast Engineer member is 54, Anderson writes, at DIYmedia.net. Enrico De Larzio at SciNews reports on a study from business students at the University of Illinois published online at the Journal of Consumer Research that shows, quote, a moderate level of ambient noise, about 70 decibels, equivalent to a passenger car traveling on a highway, enhances performance on creative tasks and increases the likelihood of consumers purchasing innovative products, unquote. Too much noise, at 85 decibels, for instance, limited creativity in purchasing, the study found. Quote, it turns out that around 70 decibels is the sweet spot. If you go beyond that, it's too loud and the noise starts to negatively affect creativity, unquote, said Ravi Mehta, a professor of business administration at the University of Illinois. Amanda Pfeffer reports on the international state of international broadcasting for Radio Canada International.
It's an incredibly dynamic time in the world. It's a junction of global political and economic upheaval on the one hand and a sweeping revolution in communications on the other. So it's a great challenge for anyone in the media business, and it's perfectly understandable that the international broadcasters, just like commercial broadcasters around the world, are really struggling to identify and adapt. I think it's something we should anticipate will continue or even accelerate in the future.
So again, that's Jeff Trindle. And certainly one of the biggest changes is the transmission through shortwave. This is how international broadcasting flourished since the Second World War. The IBB now spends $80 million on U.S. transmission through shortwave. And the next budget, they're asking for a cut to cut that in half. The Swiss service has cut it completely. The Dutch service will be cutting it, as we already mentioned, in 2013. The BBC World Service cut shortwave dramatically in the last year's budget. There's still a worldwide commitment, though, to shortwave, particularly to some audiences.
For instance?
While the U.S. is keeping shortwave to reach these audiences where internet and satellite is not available. Pakistan is one, Afghanistan is another, and China. Now, China is massively investing in shortwave radio around the world. They're launching a major soft diplomacy offensive through shortwave radio. But also, you know, they actually use shortwave to jam other people's shortwave. So they'll broadcast on the same frequencies as a U.S. service so that their audiences hear the Chinese broadcast instead. In Canada, what we're seeing is the pulling down of the towers in New Brunswick and ending this.
It was Amanda Pfeffer at Radio Canada International talking to someone from Voice of America there at the beginning of that. Behind us today is Seth Price from Game Heaven, according to video games. Over at DIYmedia.net, John Anderson talks about how the futurists look at radio and how Elliot Van Burskirk is excited about the future expansion of low-power FM radio service, suggesting that stations could look into crowdsourcing their programming, quote, using music apps to control low-powered radio stations within small urban or suburban, even rural areas, unquote. Seems like a great way to program a station on the cheap, and it would most likely sound like nothing else on the dial, I'm quoting from John Anderson at DIYmedia.net. Well, some of automation isn't too wonderful in any way, but Anderson looks at how pirate radio has already done this sort of thing in the past. Specifically, he looks at 200 Flushes Pirate Radio, a 30-watt station in Minneapolis from the mid to late 90s into the early aughts. Founded in 1995, they use several different micro-radio tactics that are regularly used today, such as using the internet as a studio to transmit or link. At the turn of the century, and I'll quote from DIY Media again. At the turn of the century, 2000 Flushes opened its airwaves to direct public access. Chief engineer Eric Generic established a website through which anyone could submit audio files of any kind. These were automatically sent to the station's playlist computer and aired within minutes of uploading. To cater to those who didn't yet have online access, 2000 Flushes set up a phone number that went straight to voicemail. People could record a rant, a song, or another ditty, which would automatically be transferred into the station's playlist. Free 103.9 has worked on similar systems. Ryan Hossapple from 31 Down has created one that we've used on a couple of projects of his. And I would also mention the San Marcos pirate radio station, Kind Radio, from the mid-90s. They had a similar policy. It wasn't programming through music apps, but it was programming through you were automatically put on the phone if you called into the radio station. The DJ answered, the music would immediately go like this, quieter, and you were on the air, and the DJ would have to interact with you until the conversation was completed. So Pirate Radio has worked on some of these kind of futurist ideas of crowdsourcing and more than one-to-many version of broadcasting. Over at Free Press, Josh Levy reports that there is a new study out called Broadband at the Speed of Light from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance that reports that three communities, Bristol, Virginia, Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Lafayette, Louisiana, had their own broadband networks built by the community rather than corporations, and they had faster, cheaper service. You can go to freepress.com for more information about that. Also, we want to tell you about this weekend is the Dayton Hamvention, the amateur radio convention, the big one in Dayton, Ohio, May 18th through May 20th. We'll be reporting on that, and so will our friends at Amateur Radio Newsline this weekend. Donna Summer, and Donna Summer on Turn on the News. That last song was by Donna Summer, the mashup artist Donna Summer, with experimental guitarist David Grubbs. Before that, we heard the original Donna Summer with On the Radio, and she passed yesterday, Wednesday, May 17th. I mean, Thursday, May 17th. Tune in to Turn on the News daily from 313.9.org. You can go to newsroom.3103.9.org for links to anything you might hear here, including links to international radio art, radio news, media news, links, and more. Go to 313.9 and newsroom.3103.9.org for everything you want to know about transmission arts. and to hear Turn on the News daily. The FCC recently announced new rules for low-power FM and translator stations in the United States, capping the translators at 50 per applicant and one per market. So as the translator stations won't eat up all the spectrum available for possible low-power FM stations and communities. On Wednesday, May 16th, the FCC held an open convention meeting. And we'll hear some questions from the audience, public questions, after Joni Mitchell.
Driving into town with a dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Honey, you turn me on. I'm a radio, I'm a country station, I'm a little bit corny, I'm a wild flower waiting for you. Broadcasting tower waiting for you. And I'm sending you this signal here. Hope you can pick it up loud and clear. I know you don't like weak women, you get bored so quick. And you don't like strong women, cause they're hip to your tricks. It's been dirty for dirty down the line, but you know I come when you whistle and you're loving and kind. If you've got too many doubts, good reception for me, then tune me out. Cause honey, who needs the static? It hurts the head and you wind up cracking, and the day goes dismal from breakfast by me to the sign of prayer. What a sorry face you get to wear. I'm gonna tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark cloud above you, smoking, call me at the station. The lights are open.
All right, this is Tom Rowe on Turn on the News, 3103.9's daily look at radio art, radio news, and more. Today we're looking at the Federal Communications Commission's meeting in the United States on Wednesday, May 16th, where they met and talked about low-power FM and translator stations. Previously, they had announced new modified rules, basically allowing more low-power FM stations on the air and not getting them trumped by full-power stations on third adjacent frequencies and by translator stations. They're interested in establishing a new class of low-power 250-watt stations for the first time in areas outside the top 50 markets, and also eliminating the 10-watt LP10 station, which no one was applying for and is economically probably not very relevant. They did not say in the meeting when the sixth report and order would be, which would clarify the final rules that would theoretically be passed later this year, when a window is expected to be open for applications for low-power stations around the country. The tool that you'll hear referred to in the recordings in a moment is a internet tool where you can go to a website, and the FCC's website, and find out if your town has a possibility of getting a low-power FM station, if it's worth your time to apply for one, if there's a frequency available in your area. That's some of the jargon they'll be discussing. You can go to newsroom.free103.9.org. Look for a post called FCC Announces LPFM Details for links to all sorts of explanations of what they're talking about, from Radio Inc. magazine, Engineering Radio, Radio Survivor, and more. So now let's go to a little lengthy question and answer towards the end of today's meeting at the Federal Communications Commission about low-power FM and translators and how you might apply for one in your town this fall.
Is there any way, the grid tool itself I don't think provides this ability, is there any way to determine if a translator, proposed translator site is short spaced to any sacred LPFM grid location on any specific channel?
I think you're asking, is there any automated way to do that?
That's exactly what I'm asking.
No.
But there may be, there could be multitudinous LPFM locations, grid locations, that you have to do those manual calculations to, and you're going to tell me yes, right?
There could be. But typically it comes down to the nearest point on the most relevant channel or channel. So, really, I would think in most cases you're looking at 3 points or 6 or 7 points. Because you're always concerned with the nearest sacred point for any of the relevant channels. And, we certainly did not, this whole process has kind of evolved. And, quite frankly, the grid tool has, it started having very minimal requirements imposed on it, and we kept kind of building on it, and so we have not built any automated tool to do this. I think we can use the grid tool in a fashion to easily assess what markets there are issues and what markets there aren't, just by taking a before and after pictures. But I know that there are folks out there that are looking to use what we've done with the grid tool and build their own tools around it to try and automate the process as much as possible.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Peter. Yes.
All right. I knew I'd lose control of this.
Is there any way at this time to find out whether a given translator application is filed as a commercial or non-commercial outside the FCC?
Not yet. Obviously the individual applicants know, but the information about the 175s has not, to my knowledge, has not been released to the public.
The question was, will it be released before the CAP process? And I believe the answer to that is no, that this goes to sort of the comparative rights of all the applicants, and I don't think we would want to do something to disturb that situation. As Jim said, the commission will need to give us some guidance as to whether or not amendments will be permitted. And I would anticipate that if that happens, applicants, will be given one opportunity to do that.
I'm thinking just when making CAP decisions, if one has a non-commercial application, if all MX applications are non-commercials, that's an entirely different situation than the situation where all of them are commercials, and it's the application is owned by a nonprofit entity.
So will that guidance be given ahead of the CAP selection?
Right.
That's fair. We'll certainly try to do that. I understand your concern. While I'm here.
Okay. Any other questions? Right, Peter's got one or two or seven more.
Not sure there's much here that we haven't covered, but let's see. Can a DU study be used to establish that one translator application is not MX to a second translator application?
That's actually a good question. We haven't been down this path yet, and I think it's something that we're certainly open to consider. I'd like to hear more from folks on that, quite frankly, because we have not been down that path yet. But I think 1204 provides this ability for translator to other station protection, so I don't know why we wouldn't allow two translators to submit such a showing to prevent mutual exclusivity. I would imagine that would be something that we would deal with at the short form settlement opportunity. So you know how to reach me if you want to
pitch.
Provide your input on that subject.
All right, here's a question. I guess more a request that we consider lifting the anti-collusion rule prior to the settlement window. And I think we've answered that. Okay, this is odd, but okay, this is sort of outside the scope. Allowing existing translator to change from translator to LPFM. I guess the answer to that is we don't have rules to do that.
Correct.
Okay, I think you covered this, but just to reinforce, does the move of an existing translator into a spectrum available market for the first time into the grid require a non-preclusion study?
I assume this is talking about a licensed translator filing a mod into a spectrum available market?
Yes.
And the answer is that type of mod is currently permitted and will be processed.
Without a non-preclusion showing?
Correct.
Okay. How do we know if a station has a reading for the blind subcarrier? Want me to answer that one?
Yeah, why don't you answer that one? No.
Okay. In the fifth report and order, the order part of that basically concluded that our current rule comported with what the LCRA told us to do with regard to third adjacent channel protection requirements for those stations with radio reading services. I don't know if a recon of that conclusion has been filed or not, but if not, then the current rule applies, and the current rule is based on those stations which appeared on a list that we prepared back in 2000. So that would be the universe of stations that would be entitled to third adjacent channel protection from a new low power station. But again, I just don't know whether there's a recon on that issue. Okay, if not, then I think that's a final rule. If Tom thinks it not, but
okay. So any other questions from the audience before? Oh, Laura?
No, I can do this.
Wait.
Jim, if the minimum number of channel floors for the market aren't met with the auction 83 translators dismissed, or I'm sorry, rather, if the minimum number isn't met when all of the translators, the pending translators, are dismissed, what do you do? How are you going to handle that?
Right. The channel, you're referring to the channel floors that were discussed
exactly.
In the fourth report and order. And basically, the channel floors were used to make distinctions as to how the particularly translators would be processed in those markets. While it's certainly, we're hopeful that those channel floors are ultimately met, there's no requirement, there's nothing that says if we don't get this many low powers in this market, something will happen or, it will turn into a pumpkin. It just, they were just floors that were used to make these distinctions as far as spectrum limited and spectrum available. And they were based on, certain factors, number of non-commercials in many of these markets and other factors that influence those floors. But there's absolutely no requirement to get to that floor.
Well,
honestly, we just can't control that. We don't know in some of these markets if we'll even have any interest from low-power advocates. So, we just take the applications. We don't require that they be filed in any particular areas.
Right. I mean, it just speaks to if the dismissal of the translator applications doesn't open up the LPFM availability, then why are those translator applications being dismissed? Which then follows this question. If the channel, a channel that's reflected in the RNO, it is, shown as available because of the dismissal of all of the the pending apps, it couldn't be proposed at a specific translator site, then is it necessary to dismiss those applications?
That's a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's a lot of questions.
Basically, Okay, first things first, there will be another translator filing opportunity. So whatever folks don't get to pursue their applications now, either because of the cap or because of the non-preclusion showing, there will be another opportunity to file applications in the entire country. So this isn't the last translator opportunity. It's just we're deciding what to do with these to hopefully prevent the loss of ability to file low powers in these markets. As far as dismissing things that don't preclude low power points, I mean, the whole standard is based on dismissing only those things that do preclude them, or only those things that don't make the proper showing to show that they don't preclude them. So, you know, in theory, everybody who complies with the cap can keep all of their applications alive in all these markets. They just have to make the non-preclusion showing.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Tamer. You're listening to Turn on the News, 3.9's daily look at radio news, radio art, media news, and more. That was highlights from the Federal Communications Commission's meeting Wednesday, May 16th, about low-power FM and translators. Now we're going to Pirate Radio Shortwave over at swling.com, swling.com/blog. Thomas reports three recent Pirate Radio Shortwave recordings from Northwoods Radio, from Undercover Radio, and behind us right now is Captain Morgan Shortwave. This was recorded Saturday, May 12th. Tumber, you're listening to Turn on the News, and behind us is one cover version of Joy Division's Transmission. Another will be this Friday, May 18th, at the Brighton Festival, where Scanner and the Heritage Orchestra is reworking Joy Division in a program called Live Transmission. Here next is a track from Scanner. This is Treble Spin on Turn on the News.
wash your twice cut lungs.
I'm Tom Murray. You're listening to Turn on the News, Free 103.9's daily look at radio news, radio art, media news, sound art, and more. Go to free103.9.org or newsroom.free103.9.org to find out more.
The preceding show was produced by Free 103.9 at the WGXE Studios in New York.